Actually, no, I undid myself.
Thank you.
folks. Welcome to the February 7th, 2009 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign and webcasting worldwide at www.weft.org. I'm Bob Polesny, here today with Tom Thomas to bring you this week's program. Dave Johnson won't be with us here today because of a meeting he had to attend. On today's show, we'll have the usual news and banter, some workers' independent news, and for the Labor Hour Cultural Corner today, Tom's poem of the week, first recited live here on WEFT, is "The World is the Workers' Due." And the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associates, station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated. And now, here's Tom with this week's underwriters.
The Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by the Illinois Education Association Teachers Union and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice. Building coalitions amongst workers, unions, and the community, the Illinois Education Association and the Central Illinois Jobs with Justice are proud to support WEFT Community Radio in East Central Illinois. The Illinois World Labor Hour is also supported in part by the listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support Community Radio in East Central Illinois.
And we'll get right into a little bit of quick music here. CD, Annie DeFranco and Utah Phillips are CD fellow workers, and we'll listen to a little bit of "The Most Dangerous Woman."
Earth Jones, Mother Jones.
Yeah.
It's hard for the mind to encompass a life that embraced the presidencies between Andrew Jackson and Herbert Hoover. Why, when Mother Jones was a little girl, there were people still alive who remembered the Revolutionary War. And she died on the eve of the New Deal. Her millinery shop burned down in the Chicago fire, and she had heard Abraham Lincoln speak in person. Mostly, though, Mother Jones was the miner's friend. Down in Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, well, the men had been organizing the underground workers, the miners. Mother Jones had already organized their wives and led them over the snow-covered game trails down into the hollows, where, armed with mops and brooms, they drove the scabs out of the coal pits. Now, Mother Jones wasn't an organizer, she was an agitator, which meant often enough she was hated as much by the organizers as by the bosses. One time, Mother Jones was out in Colorado at the great Ludlow strike. Now, that was a strike to enforce the 8-hour day, which the state of Colorado had made a law, but they couldn't enforce it because Rockefeller owned the militia. Now, the governor promised not to send the militia into the coal fields, but he lied, and he did. Mother Jones was in the Union Hall down there at Ludlow, and word came that the militia had entered the coal fields. Well, she leapt up, and she screamed, "Let's go get the sons of bitches!" And she stormed out. She didn't look to see if anybody was following her. Nobody was following her. She just flounced up the road alone and confronted the militia. And that was the year that President Theodore Roosevelt called Mother Jones the most dangerous woman in America. And she was 83 years old. That's some kind of dangerous.
Thank you.
Okay. Annie DeFranco and Utah Phillips, The Most Dangerous Woman in America. And that was about Mother Jones. And now here's Tom with the weekly labor news.
On Wednesday, the U.S. Congress granted a four-month reprieve to the millions of consumers who risk losing access to television signals during the nation's switch from over-the-air analog television to digital. Although broadcasters are saying they're ready for the transition on February 17th, having them broadcast in analog until June 12th will give more time for the consumers to prepare their sets. It also allows the government to revamp its converter box subsidy program, which had run out of money and still needs to issue the coupons to millions of people on a waiting list. The House of Representatives approved the bill 264-158 a week after the Senate did the same. President Obama has promised to sign the legislation. Consumer advocates say that as many as 10 million viewers receive their programming solely from over-the-air broadcast and are just unprepared for the transition. They need either a digital TV or a cable or satellite box or a digital-to-analog converter. Now they have an additional, not quite 4 months, to get their facilities together. Now, some of you folks may have noticed that they're still having commercials on TV saying that you only have until February 17th. Well, don't worry about that. You have until June 12th. Those commercials are bought and paid for, and they're going to run them, whether they're the truth or not. Okay, postal delivery cut I mentioned last week. I'm going to do it again this week. U.S. Postmaster General John E. Potter told Congress last week that massive deficits could force the post office to cut out one day of mail delivery. Potter was asking lawmakers to lift the requirement that the agency deliver mail 6 days a week. And if the change happens, it doesn't necessarily mean an end to Saturday mail delivery. Previous post office studies have looked at the possibility of using another day when mail flow is lighter, such as Tuesday. Faced with dwindling mail volume and steadily rising costs, the U.S. Post Office was some $2.8 billion in the red last year. The Post Office raised the issue of cutting back on days of service in a study it released last fall. Another study done by George Mason University last year for the Independent Postal Regulatory Commission estimated that going from 6-day to 5-day deliveries would save the Post Office $1.9 billion annually, while a Postal Service study estimated it would be more like $3.5 billion. The next postal rate increase is scheduled for May 2009, with the amount to be announced in February. Postal spokesmen say that increase probably would round out to a 2-cent raise in the current 42-cent first-class rate. Home values in the United States fell for the 8th consecutive quarter and had an 11.6% decline in 2008. to a Zillow Home Value Index of $192,119, according to the fourth quarter Zillow Real Estate Market Reports. Zillow.com, an online real estate service, tracks 161 metropolitan areas for its reports. The declines mean that U.S. homeowners lost a cumulative $3.3 trillion in home value during 2008, with much of that loss coming in the fourth quarter. Homeowners lost $1.4 trillion during the fourth quarter alone, much more than the $1.3 trillion lost in all of 2007. Since the housing market's peak in 2006, $6.1 trillion in home value has been lost. Foreclosures made up nearly a fifth, or 19.9%, of all real estate transactions in 2008, a direct result of a screwed-up economy. Macy's plans to slash about 7,000 jobs and cut its quarterly dividend as a result of dismal sales. According to Macy's spokesman, the department store chain said it expects its 2009 same-store sales to be down by 6 to 8%, hampered by a weak spring season, but hopefully rebounding some in the fall. To help reverse the sales declines, Macy is expanding a program that suits their merchandise to different markets. Macy's CEO Terry Lundgren said the company's stores will be grouped into an additional 49 geographic districts on top of the 20 areas already a part of the retailer's My Macy's initiative. The move will cause the net reduction of 7,000 jobs, but will create 1,200 district and regional positions. Macy's said the job cuts will reduce expenses by some $250 million in 2009 and $400 million yearly starting in 2010. Most retailers other than Walmart and a few teen-targeted groups have been hit hard in this recession economy, but Macy's December sales were actually better than most of its department store competitors. Even with the 4% sales decline for that month, it outperformed JCPenney's, Neiman Marcus, and Nordstrom by a wide margin. Only Kohl's department stores with a 1.4% decline actually did better. Bob, back to you.
Yeah, Tom, in addition to those Macy's layoffs, I got some Estee Lauder here this week on February 5th, fired 6% of its workforce, 2,000 employees. Time Warner Cable dismissed 1,250 on bad fourth quarter results. Cisco Systems says revenue will be down more than expected, and they pink-slipped 2,000 workers. And locally, you mentioned last week that Peoria was shutting down several
plants. Yeah, the Caterpillar plant.
Right. 3,000 or 2,100 people in Illinois, almost
1,000
of those.
Yeah, people are in East Peoria, Aurora, and Decatur.
Decatur, correct, yeah. And Decatur alone, I think there's close to 1,000 people there.
Yeah, actually it's a little over 1,000, I believe, from the numbers I researched.
Right. And this week, locally here, Meadowbrooks Farms up in Rantoul area is announcing they're going through financial problems, and they say that
they're having to close down for a while.
They're going to lay off 600 workers this week, so that's incredible. So
the numbers keep growing.
Yes. And let's get back into a little more music here. Bob Marley's song "Work." Yesterday would have been Bob Marley's 64th birthday. was Bob Marley, Work. Last week we had a guest commentator call in, John Ryman, and we had a couple phone calls. People were wondering how to either get hold of his book or additional writings and stuff like that. And John Ryman does have a blog site out there. I'll give you that web address now, www.iww.org/en/blog/1411. 1411. So if you're interested in finding out some more of John's thoughts on various subjects, he is very knowledgeable about financial issues, about the Israeli-Gaza issue and stuff like that. You can check that website out and get his blog going. And now back to some more labor news with Tom Thomas.
Metropolitan areas across the southeastern and midwestern United States are seeing some of the steepest increases in joblessness in the struggling housing and auto sectors. That is one of the key trends that emerges from a Labor Department report released last week showing December unemployment rates rose in 98% of the country's largest metropolitan areas compared with a year earlier. More than 100,000 job cuts have been announced since December by a wide range of industries, sparing few, if any, communities. The government's next monthly report on nationwide employment is expected to show that the January rate climbed to a 17-year high. Jobless rates climbed in 363 of 369 metropolitan areas in December, and January's numbers are not looking better at all. According to a Federal Reserve report released last week, U.S. banks were miserly with credit through mid-January as the economy plunged and the loan demand deteriorated. Banks continued to impose tight conditions on borrowers, even as the Treasury Department provided about $200 billion in capital infusions under a special $700 billion financial rescue law. Treasury officials have pressed lenders to make loans to good clients to get the economy moving. The Fed has also begun buying up to $500 billion in mortgage-backed securities to unfreeze rent lending. The Fed report showed slight improvement. Banks were more willing to make mortgage and consumer installment loans in the past 3 months. Fewer banks cited their worsening capital positions as reasons for denying credit. If you are looking for a job or are in fear of losing your own job, President Obama says he can help 3 to 4 million of you. However, that may be a little optimistic. The Congressional Budget Office says Obama's economic stimulus package of spending programs and tax cuts would create 1.2 to 3.6 million jobs. At the same time, the economic consulting firm IHS Global Insight puts the number at more like 2.6 million. Most of the jobs would only replace those lost to the recession, and even with the stimulus package, the administration estimates that unemployment would be as much as 7% at the end of 2010, which is barely below the current better than 7.5% rate. When the U.S. Senate began debate on the package last week, much of the focus turned to jobs specifically. How many there would be, how quickly they would be created, how much they could pay, what benefits would be made available, and just who would get the jobs. So far, the most we can do is wait and see. And finally, according to the American Wind Energy Association and the Global Wind Energy Council, the USA passed Germany in 2008 to become number one nation in the world in wind power capacity. Last year, the U.S. jumped 50% to 8,358 megawatts, or enough to serve 2 million homes. Wind capacity globally grew some 29% in 2008, which is only good and getting better for the environment wherein we have to habitate. And it'll be great for all of our wallets as long as the wind blows. Bob, back to you.
Okay, I think we're going to jump right back into some more music from that Annie DeFranco, Utah Phillips CD, Fellow Workers, and we'll listen to Pie in the Sky.
A long-haired preacher's come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet. Hey, by and by, in that glorious land in the sky, work and pray, live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. That's a lie. Now, Joe Hill was executed by the state of Utah November 19th, 1915, for writing songs like this. But he left them to us. These are our people's songs. You damn well ought to learn how to sing it, don't you think? It's done Baptist style. There must be some Baptists around here somewhere. You understand what I mean? Are there any Baptists here? Good. Answer back. I sing out a line, and then you sing it back, and then we sing a line together. All right? And you follow these guys. You will eat.
You will eat.
By and by.
By and by.
In that glorious land in the sky.
Way up high.
Work and pray.
Work and pray.
Live on hay.
Live on hay.
You'll get pie in the sky when you die.
That's a lie.
Yeah, real vociferous on that last part, all right? And the starvation army, they play. And they shout and they clap and they praise. When they've got all your coins on the drum, and they will tell you when you're on the bum. You will
eat
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land in the sky.
Way up high.
Work and pray.
Work and pray.
Live on hay.
Live on hay.
You'll get pie in the sky when you die.
That's a lie.
Holy rollers and jumpers come out, and they roll and they jump and they shout. Give your money to Jesus, they say, and you'll eat on that glorious day. Hey,
you will eat
by and by,
by and by,
in that glorious land in the sky.
Work and pray,
live on hay,
live on hay.
You'll get pie in the sky when you die.
That's a lie.
Working folks of all countries unite. Side by side, we for freedom shall fight. When this world and its wealth we have gained, to the grafters we'll sing this refrain.
You will eat
by and by. When you've learned how to cook and how to fry, chop some wood,
chop some wood,
do you good,
do you good,
and you'll eat in that sweet by and by.
That's
no lie.
Okay, the cultural corner this week. Tom Thomas's poem is "The World Is the Worker's Due."
We need to see society be all that it can truly be. We need to have equality in order for us to be free. We need to have a government that we will not have to lament, a government without portent and not toward illegal war bent. We are a working family, this family of men, you see. Together, each and all should be in favor of a world that's free. Free to get up in the morning, heeding the alarm clock's warning. Free of all the tyrants scorning and capitalistic shorning. To jobs we want, we'll go each day. In homes we build, we all will stay. None will hunger in any way when we have reached that special day. Let's hope that soon we'll see that time when gluttony, that evil, that greedy crime, is driven from the human clime and buried deep beneath the grime. We need to make each CEO aware of what each one should know, that down in power each must go in order for our earth to grow. The world is the worker's due, for all of us, not just a few. And we who dare to say what's true are many more than just a few. And we are standing together in spite of all stormy weather. Our resolve tougher than leather. We have the choice as to whether. "The World Is the Worker's Due" was written at the Poets' Loft in Champaign, Illinois on February 3, 2009 and was first recited live February 7, 2009 on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support.
And we'd like to announce that WEFT is still working in conjunction with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. For every $10 that's contributed to WEFT, $1 will be donated to the food bank. And for every $1 that the food bank receives, they will provide up to $10 worth of food to families in need in a 14-county-wide area of Eastern Illinois. You can help support the services that WEFT and the Eastern Illinois Food Bank provide to your community. You can contribute online at weft.org or send a donation to WEFT, Post Office Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois, 61824. Tom?
WEFT sends thanks to Stone Creek, Big Blue Stem, Strings Attached, Close to Home, The Iron Post, and all the fans who came out to support WEFT 90.1 FM last Saturday night for a very successful event. The 12th Annual Homelessness Marathon will air from Pest Christian, Mississippi at 6 p.m. Monday, February 23rd through 8 a.m. Tuesday morning, February 24th. For more information, go to homelessnessmarathon.org. And Jeremy Alderson, voice of the Homelessness Marathon, will be our guest on the Sunday morning open forum, 10 to 11 p.m. on a.m. rather, excuse me, on February the 15th.
And I got a little news story here. IBM offers to move their laid-off workers to India. The climate is warm, there's no shortage of exotic food, and the cost of living is rock bottom. That's IBM's pitch to the laid-off American workers it's offering to place in India. The catch? Wages in the country are pennies on the dollar compared to U.S. salaries.
And they actually want to move Americans to India?
After they've laid them off, yes. Wow. Under a program called Project Match, IBM will help workers laid off from domestic sites obtain travel and visa assistance for countries in which Big Blue has openings. Mostly, that's developed markets like India, China, and Brazil. IBM has established Project Match to help you locate potential job opportunities in growth markets where your skills are in demand, IBM says in an internal notice on the initiative. Should you accept a position in one of these countries, IBM offers financial assistance to offset moving costs, provides immigration support such as visa assistance and other support to help ease the transition of an international move. The document states that the program is limited to satisfactory performers who have been notified of separation from IBM in U.S. or Canada and are willing to work on local terms and conditions. The latter indicates that workers will be paid according to prevailing norms in the countries to which they relocate. In many cases, this would be substantially less than what they earned in North America.
In other words, you're getting a raise from minimum wage to half that much.
Exactly. IBM has laid off more than 4,000 workers in the United States since the beginning of January, according to an employee group. The company has confirmed layoffs but won't comment on specific numbers. A spokesman for Alliance at IBM, a workers group that's affiliated with the Communication Workers of America, but which does not have official union status at IBM, slammed the program. IBM is not only offshoring IBM U.S. jobs, but they want employees to offshore themselves through Project Match, says the spokesman. An IBM spokesman said the program shouldn't be seen in that light. It's more of a vehicle for people who want to expand their life experience by working somewhere else, said the spokesman. A lot of people want to work in India. In addition to India, China, and Brazil, IBM is offering to relocate redundant U.S. workers to a number of other developing markets, including Mexico, the Czech Republic, Russia, South Africa, Nigeria, and the United Arab Emirates, according to the notice, which was obtained Monday. So that's an interesting story there, isn't it, Tom?
Oh, yeah.
Let's see if we can get to some Workers Independent news here for this week. We usually like to play some of that. If I can get the CD player to cooperate here.
You're listening
finally.
To WIN.
Sorry about the delay.
News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
We know that you cannot have a strong middle class without a strong labor movement. We know that strong, vibrant, growing unions can exist side by side with strong, vibrant, and growing businesses. This isn't a either-or proposition between the interests of workers and the interests of shareholders. That's the old argument. When workers are prospering, they buy products that make businesses prosper.
President Barack Obama, as he signed executive orders protecting union workers in federal contracts and making it harder for companies with federal contracts to impede unions. Obama's attitude toward unions is a stark contrast from his predecessors.
We have to reverse many of the policies towards organized labor that we've seen these last 8 years. Policies with which I've sharply disagreed. I do not view the labor movement as part of the problem. To me, it's part of the solution.
Chief executives of companies receiving bailout money could be looking at a pay cut, Jesse Russell reports.
On Wednesday, President Barack Obama took a shot at chief executives who receive extraordinary pay when he announced a cap on that pay for executives of companies that will receive exceptional financial recovery assistance from the federal government. Those companies would not be allowed to pay executives more than $500,000 in annual compensation. The decision is not retroactive to companies that have already received money from the $700 billion Wall Street bailout. Obama said executives at financial firms need to take responsibility. Wall Street executives paid out more than $20 billion in bonuses during 2008. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner said the cap would help restore confidence for the American people and contribute to getting credit flowing again. The Treasury Secretary is also expected to announce a program next week that is intended to help free up the lockdown credit markets.
Amy Peterson is president of New, Non-Traditional Employment for Women. It's a New York City program that helps women get into the union construction trades.
They get a good entry-level wage that then goes up dramatically as they learn their trade. They have a real skill, and they transform their lives. They are able to provide for their families. They do things that they couldn't imagine that they could do when they walk through the door of our program.
Here is today's economic report. All throughout the month of January, we were bombarded with news of mass layoffs. But what was the end total? According to the employment report from ADP, the private sector let go of 522,000 jobs in January, with the service sector leading the total with 279,000 jobs lost. Mid-sized businesses employing between 50 and 499 employees were hit especially hard, losing 255,000 jobs. Small businesses, or those with fewer than 50 workers, let go of 175,000 employees.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The U.S. Senate on Thursday postponed a committee vote on the Labor Secretary nomination of Representative Hilda Solis after her husband paid $6,400 to settle outstanding tax liens. Republicans had delayed action on Solis' nomination earlier out of their opposition to the Employee Free Choice Act labor law reform. The Obama administration says the Solis nomination is not in trouble. Solis is the most pro-worker, pro-union Labor Secretary nominee in many years. The Obama administration is trying to make spending under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan transparent. Jesse Russell reports.
Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood unrolled a new plan on Thursday to make spending under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan accountable and transparent. Part of the plan is to have an oversight board post updates on a new government website called recovery.gov.
See where the dollars are spent, in which cities and towns the money is going to, and for which projects.
LaHood said 75% of the package would be spent out in the first 18 months after passage. LaHood wasn't sure how the money would be allocated state by state, but he will be meeting with all 50 transportation secretaries next Wednesday to help inform the funding decisions.
We've asked them to bring to us some of the projects that they think can really be funded immediately upon passage of this bill, and I think we'll have a better idea.
The newly formed National Union of Healthcare Workers says a total of 25,000 hospital workers so far in California at 101 facilities will be able to vote to quit SEIU and join the new union. NUHW was founded last week by leaders of United Healthcare Workers West. That's the big local taken over in a trusteeship action by SEIU International. SEIU International decided to reorganize the local over the objections of its former leaders and its rank-and-file workers. Efforts are underway now to get elections for as many of the approximately 150,000 UHW members as possible to leave SEIU. SEIU International's Dave Regan, though, says SEIU will fight every step of the way to keep UHW workers in SEIU rather than have them join the new National Union of Healthcare Workers. The AFL-CIO on Thursday announced creation of a new Center for Green Jobs to focus on helping unions, workers, and their partners create the environmentally sustainable economy of the future. The center is already partnering with the AFL-CIO Building and Construction Trades Department to recruit and train green workers.
Here is today's economic report. A congressional oversight panel informed the U.S. Senate Banking Committee on Thursday that the U.S. Treasury may have overpaid as it invested portions of the $700 billion into financial institutions. A full report will be released today, but the panel found that the Treasury Department spent $254 billion for assets only worth $176 billion. Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama called the Treasury's funding decisions haphazard, opaque, and disingenuous.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Tom Harmon Radio Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our show, your radio stations.
Following up a little bit on some of the Workers' Independent News there, a little bit on the Republican double standard for Labor Secretary Hilda Solis. Senate Republicans are continuing the same partisan roadblock political games that voters said they'd had enough of in November. This time, their stubborn gamesmanship threatens the working families across the country. They're trying to derail President Obama's economic recovery plan and block his pick of Hilda Solis as Secretary of Labor. AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says enough is enough. We cannot continue to fiddle as the economy burns. It is urgent for the American people to have an aggressive emergency economic recovery plan that will put people back to work and keep families in their homes and a strong Department of Labor. Today we learned that the nation lost nearly 600,000 jobs. They can oppose the Secretary of Labor because she supports working Americans and favors curbing excessive corporate power. They need to stop obstructing and confirm Representative Solis now. Yesterday, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee postponed the scheduled confirmation vote on the Solis nomination. Obama announced his choice of Solis in December, and the committee held a hearing on the nomination January 9th. On top of that, when Republican panel members weren't satisfied, she answered 15 sets of their written questions. Some Republican senators and their echo chamber of right-wing talk radio and conservative blogs are attacking Solis over the Employee Free Choice Act, which she co-sponsored in the House. Republican senators have even suggested that if confirmed, Solis could be barred from advocating for the restoration of workers' rights to form a union and bargain for better life, as the bill provides. Writing in the American Prospect, Harold Meyerson says that when Republican senators asked that Solis recuse herself from discussions about the Employee Free Choice Act, it's like asking Robert Gates not to advocate for the armed forces, or Judd Gregg not to champion American business, or President Obama's environmental picks not to support stricter fuel efficiency standards. But then Republicans' opposition to unions is close to clinically pathological. Solis's support for the Employee Free Choice Act isn't exactly a secret. She co-sponsored the bill when it passed the House in 2007, nor is she deviating from the administration policy in backing it, since Obama pledged to support the bill during his presidential campaign. Ironically, actually hypocritically, the same Republican senators don't mind former President Bush's labor secretary, Elaine Chao, shutting workers and their unions out of the Labor Department for 8 years. They even cheered. She went so far as to write guest editorials against the bill. Now these senators have their knockers in a knot because the Secretary of Labor might actually listen to labor and support workers' rights. How dare she? Solis, says Sweeney, understands that working men and women deserve the freedom to choose whether to form a union without employee interference. The core mission of the Department of Labor is to defend the basic rights of workers in our nation's workplaces, and the essential qualification of any Secretary of Labor is demonstrated commitment to that core mission. And back into some music here.
taking care of business. Taking care of business.
Every day.
Taking care of business.
Every way.
Taking care of business.
It's all mine.
Taking care of business.
Working overtime. Woo!
Taking care of business. Taking care of business.
We've been taking care of business.
Okay, here's a story from Johannesburg. South African dock workers won't unload ships carrying goods from Israel in solidarity with the Palestinians, a union leader said Wednesday. Randall Howard, general secretary of the South African Transport and Allied Workers Union, said it appeared a ship carrying goods from Israel was nearing Durban's port. If, once the ship docks, its cargo is determined to be Israeli, he said, union workers won't unload it. We will make that contribution, he said. The historic and heroic struggle of the Palestinian people for self-determination is a struggle that SATAWU supports. Last year, South African dock and freight workers refused to unload a ship carrying weapons for Zimbabwe to protest Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe's rule of the neighboring country. In the case of Israeli goods, Howard said, it did not matter whether they were weapons or vegetable. If it's an Israeli product, we're going to boycott it, plain and simple, he said. And here's a statement of solidarity with their brothers in the Durban South African Transport and Allied Workers Union, and this is from the West Coast Longshoremen. We, West Coast Longshoremen, organizers of the 1984 boycott action against a ship from apartheid South Africa, stand in solidarity with your action to protest the Zionist slaughter in Gaza and Israeli oppression of Palestinians. The International Longshore and Warehouse Union has a long record of defending Palestinian rights, just as the Palestinians have taken a strong stance against apartheid. Your bold action will set an example for all dock workers around the world who dare to act against injustice. And then Liverpool dock workers also came out in support of the Durban dock workers. And now we'll go to a public service announcement from Tom.
WEFT is a co-sponsor of Krannert Art Museum's Sudden Sound Concert Series, presenting leading artists in the fields of improvised music and jazz avant-garde. On Thursday, February 12th at 7:30 p.m., the series features a duet performance of Bon Seri flute master Steve Gorn and guitar virtuoso Farid Haq, performing compositions and improvisations weaving diverse musical traditions into audio tapestries. That's the Steve Gorn Farid Haq duo Thursday, February 12th at 7:30 p.m. at Krannert Art Museum. Krannert Art Museum is located at 500 East Peabody Drive in Champaign. Admission is free.
Okay, we've been kind of following some of the battles between SEIU and the United Health Workers West Union out there in California. And here's a story from Counterpunch, or at least a portion of the story, regarding SEIU seizing a United Health Workers Union Hall. And this is from Oakland. I've forgotten the technical term, a senior moment perhaps. What do you call a mob of white people who, with the police standing by, attack a handful of defenseless people, in this case mostly women of color, a few youngsters, humiliate them, drive them from their home? This mob, 30, maybe 40 strong, mostly very nice-dressed white men for this side of struggling Oakland, was led by a young female lawyer. There were a couple of nasty ex-cops in tow just in case. They used bolt cutters to get through the parking lot gates and back. They smashed their way through a second floor window, then pushed their way to the front, where they opened the doors, let in the rest of the mob, and then ended the occupation, evicting the former members of the United Healthcare Workers West from their union hall, their house. Whose house? Our house. No more. The Oakland cops arrived just in time to see to it that the freshly evicted behaved themselves. They were not impressed, apparently, by the fact that the workers actually had the building's deed in hand. Neither were they concerned that no court had sanctioned this invasion. A Sergeant Kelly assured the workers that everything was just as it should be. This mob, these people were Mary Kay Henry's warriors, staff members, and lawyers of the Service Employees International Union, recruited from around the country to do battle. They came, possibly 200 strong, to California to break the UHW, the dissident 150,000-member healthcare workers' union, a militant and democratic union that represented hospital workers, long-term and home care workers, plus others throughout California. They call it trusteeship, the trade union equivalent, according to Steve Early, a martial law, Mary Kay Henry, and SEIU executive vice president, paid $200,000 a year, personally pushed her way into the hall. She was assisted by another executive vice president, David Regan, a $200,000 a year guy as well. I guess they were on hand just to show that SEIU was serious, but also perhaps a little bullying firsthand was a pleasant diversion from the banalities of Washington, D.C. life. In Reagan's case, this seems a career specialization. Last March, he helped orchestrate SEIU's physical but unsuccessful assault on the Labor Notes Conference in Detroit. It all had an air of slumming it. Coming here to this neighborhood in Oakland where Jerry Brown's grand gentrification scheme is languishing, upscale apartments sit empty, the atmosphere of the neighborhood still owes more to the social services office at the end of the street and the Greyhound bus station around the corner. The rented SUVs and the black Audi sedans stood out on the Thomas Berkeley Way, where United Healthcare Workers had its headquarters for more than 20 years. Its roots go back to the 1934 general strike. It has been an important factor in California labor history. I spent 2 days with what might best be called a rear guard action, United Healthcare Workers members holding the passes, so to speak, as the rest of the old organization, UHW, spread throughout the state signing up members for their new union, the National Union of Healthcare Workers, NUHW. The mob, of course, preferred to remain nameless, as is their wont. What is your name? Who are you? Cold glare. The workers, on the contrary, were quite proud to be here, to be there. Certainly no one hid in the back. Mel Garcia, a medical assistant with 31 years at Kaiser Haywood and elected chief shop steward, told me, after Puerto Rico, site of the 2008 SEIU convention, all bets were off for me. The way they treated us, I can't believe I have the opportunity to make history. We're out from under the grand dictator. We can have a union that belongs to us, a union for the members.
For the people.
And we'll finish up with a little bit of Ann Feeney and Which Side Are You On?
Come all of you good workers, this news to you I'll tell. The rights we take for granted now, we have no right to sell. Does anyone remember the days with Bold John L? It's thanks to him no child of mine will know the breaker's hell. Tell me which side are you on?
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 Which side are you on? From the world of suits and ties, they preach cooperation. Don't